I'm actually a teacher, first and foremost, and I've come in from a school to work in the university for a couple of years. And I work in a school with computing subjects where social and ethical issues are a very big part of what we do. And LAMS gives us a chance to enable students to think about ethical decisions, and running through a LAMS sequence allows them to think about what's happening beforehand and after giving them information. It's really important to have students have a voice, to have a vote. But in a classroom, something John Hedberg said this morning was, so that it was a community of learners rather than the person who talks the loudest. And often in a classroom, when you're asking for opinions, it's the student who talks the loudest. And that actually gets back to Leanne said the same in lectures, that it's not everybody who has a voice. LAMS allows everybody to have that voice and to have that discussion. If I was doing it in a classroom without LAMS, I would do a think, pair, share activity where they actually thought about the situation, where they shared it with a partner, and then perhaps shared it with the team. One of the situations could be the rights of copying software. If you ask a student, can you copy software? Of course, their answer is yes. That's not true. So therefore, how do we get them to think about that in a logical way? So in the classroom situation, that's what I would be doing. Once they'd come up with for and against in a debate, a class debate, we'd actually have the debate within the classroom. Now, again, you're dealing with, it could be a big class, it could be a small group, but it makes it difficult for everybody to have that voice. And of course, my favourite trick if I was debating is that I switch them for the rebuttal, so they actually have to rebut themselves, which means that all their great arguments they have to now speak against. But in LAMS, I've got so many more choices. I can pre-test them. I can ask them to vote on whether they think it's legal to copy software, or whether they think it's legal to copy images, or whether they think it's legal to take a whole chunk of text off the internet. Because for students in a classroom, they have that idea that the internet is free. One can use anything one likes from the internet. And then when they get into a senior class, and the same at university, they discover that in actual fact one can't plagiarise or copy or do any of those other things. And so doing this with students, secondary students, and down into primary, is a really good way of doing it. I can provide them with information. I can look at the end of the sequence and see how much thinking has gone on and whether they've actually come to terms with what is the resources that I have given them to change their opinion, the opinion that they started with. So I might survey them to begin with using the survey tool within LAMS, to ask them how long they in fact actually spend on the internet, to introduce them to the project by asking them how much time do they spend, do they use the internet for school projects, or in fact do they use the internet more for social networking. So the survey there is just getting an idea of time spent and how the internet is used. And of course I might ask them to vote, to make a decision, to get off the fence, to say, well, true or false, I can copy information. True or false, I can take any image I want. True or false, I can copy a whole slab of text. Make them vote. Make them think. Get them to make a decision. If I was doing that without a structured LAMS sequence, you wonder how much peer pressure is involved in how they vote. and whether in fact they can be the person that sits at the back of a room and doesn't vote at all, because they'll just disappear into the ether and not have to make a decision. But this way, they all have to make a decision, because Lambs allows them to have that vote. I would then go to a question and answer tool and ask them what copyright meant to them. And the bonus about the question and answer tool is that once they've said what copyright means to them, they can view everybody else's responses. So that they then get, if there's 15 people in doing the LAMP sequence, they get 15 people, the ideas from 15 people as to what copyright is. So they're now beyond their thinking into the thinking of other people. And it's the view all responses there that makes a difference. From there, I would go to a chat. Now, it's same as a classroom discussion, except that here, everybody's going to participate because they're all involved in the sequence. I can randomly group. I can group according to students, and I would do that, I guess, very much based on my knowledge of the people that were involved in this sequence. So that's entirely a decision based on who's within your group. Now, Leanne talked about Lambs 1 being anonymous, Lambs 2 being not anonymous, and my complaints, plus a whole lot of other people, about how really that anonymous factor is really good. It's very good to be anonymous to one another for students, especially if we want all students to have a voice without fear of what somebody will say to them about what they've said. Now, within the new next version of LAMS, we can be anonymous, but the thread will be tracked. So if they start off yellow, they will continue as yellow, but you won't know who is yellow or who is red or who is whatever colour. So they will be anonymous to one another, but within Monitor, I'll know who's saying what. Now that, to me, is going back to Lambs 1, gives a real voice for students without having to worry what anybody else says to them. The fact that I can monitor it, of course, is essential. Now, I've done a lot of things up till then. We've voted. We've had a Q&A about, for example, what is copyright. We've chatted about what it is to other people. And at this point, knowing, for example, on copying software, that their answer is going to be yes, of course I can, or copying from the internet, yes, of course I can, I'm now going to provide some resources to show that no, I can't do this. So I'm going to direct them to the websites that I want them to go to make some discoveries about what they can and can't do. Within the shared resources, you can get them from something like this, which is suitable for younger children, right through to resources from universities. So you can structure those resources to suit a wide range of ages. Another shared resource about what I can do, whether I can copy. Appealing to younger students. Excellent. This one is a superb site for all sorts of things, like what is royalty-free, copyleft, attribution. This is a particularly good site. So from here, the students would pick up a lot of resources and a lot of information. I perhaps would then say to them, because we're talking about copyright, and maybe if I was talking about plagiarism, well, this is what it is. It's taking the work of somebody else and passing it off as your own. Discuss this with your group. Again, I can randomly group, or I can play the game and put certain people in certain groups that I want them to be in to lead the discussion. Once I've had a discussion on plagiarism again, we might go off and say, well, what is it? Where do I go? Where do I get these resources from? And I think they're the biggest two issues with the net, is that idea of copyright and that idea of plagiarism. So where do I go now? What can I do? This particular quiz is from Monash's site, so it's really good for older students, certainly senior secondary students. It's brilliant. I could also use something like a web quest. So I'm bringing in more than websites. I think another favourite site of mine to use is Turnitin, where I show secondary students Turnitin. I don't think I ever say yes I use it or no I don't. I don't think they're game enough to ask that. But it gives them an idea of what is possible out there for something like plagiarism. So now we've identified it. We've talked about it. We've found resources. But what I want them to now do is think about how they can avoid plagiarism. So they've now got to, in this question and answer, come up with concrete ways that they have discovered or learnt through the resources that they can now avoid plagiarism. This gives them a chance to discuss it. Now, it's interesting because within LAMS, you can, once you've submitted your answer, you've got two choices. One is to edit it, and one is to view all responses. So having seen their answer, they can then go back and think, well, all right, I can think of something else here, and go back and edit their answer. But once they've done that, that view all responses button is what's going to give them all sorts of suggestions from other students. What if they're all the same? What if there's not enough variety at this point? Well, this is where a teacher would need to be monitoring it and can step in and make some suggestions. But here, the students have the voice to actually come up with what they think they can do. Now, as far as the actual using of LAMS, how would I do that in a classroom? By getting them to go off to a website, by getting them to discuss, and I would lose a group of people all the way through. At various stages for the discussion, there'd be a group of people that would be lost. For those who were giving answers, there would be a group of people that would be lost. Do I think everybody would be involved in the LAMS sequence? Well, they don't have any choice. They have to participate at a level that they have to do each of those activities, so that I am actually getting something from them for the chat, for I can make the forum to make it a different tool. I can allow them in the forum to start a new thread. So I've asked them for ideas of how they can avoid it. They could come up with a new thread, a new topic within this plagiarism. So within LAMS, I can involve a whole range of tools, a range of resources, and hopefully finish with a group of students that have to make an ethical decision. One of the students last year, and it's up in the LAMS community, looked at the ethics of viewing remains. For example, body remains. She did it on Pompeii, and she used as an example an article on the Aboriginal remains that were in London that were to be returned to Tasmania. So that was a historical sequence where, again, she looked at social and ethical issues. For me, I would look at issues such as, well, copyright and plagiarism belongs to everybody. Syllabus in the New South Wales senior school at the moment says the ethical use of the internet. So there isn't anybody that shouldn't be participating here. And the further down the school system the students use computers, we almost should be doing copyright and plagiarism in a simple way, and voting and getting kids involved right from kindergarten. In libraries, we're taught about seeking information. On the internet, we're not taught. We just grow up with it, and it happens. For me, we also look at issues such as the nature of work. We look at issues, well, you could bring in occupational health and safety in some of your courses, such as your vet courses. Occupational health and safety, what is right and what is wrong with occupational health and safety. So this idea of social and ethical issues goes across the board. It is not restricted in any way to computing subjects. But here, they have to vote. They can't sit on the fence. They have to make a decision. Whether the decision in the first place is right or wrong. We didn't say that. They have to make the decision. And hopefully by the time we ask them to vote again at the end, one would hope that they make the right decision. If it was copying software, I know that some of my students would still say it's okay to copy it, but we've at least along the way encouraged them to make some decisions. There we go. Good. Yes?
Okay. So we've got any questions? The one issue that I'd like to talk about is Martin Boyle. I'm not sure if anyone remembers that case. It was a student hacked into Amazon, and I think it was American Express. And he was a Canadian student, but the damage he did was worth millions of dollars, and the American companies wanted to charge him, sue him. He was a 15-year-old kid based in Montreal, and obviously, he did not have a lot as far as resources go, so the company sued his teachers. Because his defence was he didn't know what he was doing was wrong, and he didn't know hacking into somebody else's computer. Imagine that being a problem. But the defence was, and so they sued successfully the Montreal Department of Education. So I think it was a really interesting case, and from that moment on, I made sure every class I ever taught.
I mean, I know of a student who's just finishing a degree now, and it's taken him perhaps 5 years, but in his first year at a university, when plagiarism was a major issue, in all honesty, he just simply said, I have done this all my school life. And now I'm losing a course because I've done what I've always done. So we have to teach students to be ethical users of technology. And this, to me, is a good way of doing it because you force them into making decisions. That they have to make that. They have to vote one way or the other. And no matter... on the weekend, there was an instance of a student using an iPhone that his father had hacked so that it would run on with an Australian company, and he was using that in class to watch videos on demand. So he was showing kids all sorts of videos. So the technology is there. We've got to teach them how to use it, to be moral users of it, to challenge them to make these social and ethical decisions. That's right. That's exactly right. That's right. And I don't know whether it's a catch-22. If you discussed with those particular students who put the fight up, the ethical issues of putting the fight up, well, you've got to make a dent somewhere, haven't you? So with some of them, you certainly would make a dent. But I just find it an excellent tool to make them make decisions.
Can the kids come back to it at any point? Like, the activities will sit there. So your learning activity on a social and ethical issue, like you treat it like pre-test and post-test. Mm-hmm. So, 3 weeks later in the unit, you might do a variety of issues. You could have them go back and look at their answers.
Yes.
Their responses then.
Yes. Yeah, so it's all there. It just stays. It remains.
It's a choice, usually, is attention. Mm-hmm.
Want to take it down. Mm. But yes, it can be reused. And certainly to include in it, as in your shared resources as well as websites, the for senior students, the lady who's just paid $220,000 in the States for downloading 24 tunes is a wonderful article. For me, as teaching senior computing, those sort of current, up-to-date articles are excellent because that's the sort of thing students say. Well, they'll only go for the big companies. In that case, you know, not the 15-year-old, the teacher, but to actually provide material that says, well, here they're now going after individuals and this is the cost. So I find that excellent, to be able to direct them to those articles and then ask questions, because I could ask questions of them as well within here. I wonder if I asked, would it change their mind about their practices, what their answers would be? And probably no, but, well, I don't know. I don't know, because I think they sort of think that they can't be caught. They can't, like the student with the plagiarism, he just, it's not going to affect me. But it is a tool that we can use to do it.
I've just got a question. I mean, the way we're going, I mean, there's so many students going through school, and then there's a lot of people. Literally, it's going to be quite rare. You can't write your own brain cycle, because there's just no way to put together the words that no one else has done before. And what stage is that when you're not able to?
Very true. I don't think I have an answer to that,
no.
Because that's... Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and it's very difficult.
Well, I guess that comes back to the teacher and asking original questions instead of saying, don't worry, it's all right, that's
My statement to pre-service teachers is, if they can copy and paste, then you've asked the wrong question. It's not their problem, it's your problem. So if you're asking them a question they can copy and paste, then you're asking for it. So you've got to ask the type of question that requires them to compare and contrast, to do some higher order thinking, so that they can't just copy and paste.
Can I just sort of take a slightly different tack here? If I were to put up one of my magnificent sequences, Sharing the Land of Community, copyright of that is going to be covered under the conditions of creative commons.
Yes.
If, however, I take my masterpiece and I share it at my school or across my sort of local group, there's no copyright that then sort of like hits me in the face that I need to cover, to share with the other practitioners at my workplace. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, with...
No?
But if I
share it with, say, yourself, and you're at my school, then you take a copy and then it, you know, snowballs and moves along, where is the conditions of copyright that are expressed? Explicitly expressed.
Within the LAM sequence, it's not at all. And you'll notice on LAM's community, and I talk about this in my next one, that there are some people who share alike, so you can alter it, and there are others that say, no, I don't want that. It has to remain exactly as it is. So you can use it, but you can't alter it. But then that's, once it's gone up onto LAM's community, it becomes under the Creative Commons, and you actually make those decisions when you put it up on LAM's community as to whether you want it share alike or you don't want it ever altered.
But if I just share it, doesn't go to that community. If I just share it with colleagues at my school.
Are you giving permission to those people
to sharing it?
Oh, yes, that's inside.
That's right, because otherwise you wouldn't give it.
That's the fear, really, that a lot of teachers and users aren't.
What are you worried about them doing with your sequence? Are you worried about them passing it on as their own work, or are you worried about them changing it in some way that you don't?
Well, if I've attended to copyright detail, even addressing their images.
Yes, within your sequence.
Within my sequence that I've addressed and I have that covered. and then someone else uses it in a different way, then that's going to breach copyright conditions. I mean, those sort of, I mean, there's millions of scenarios.
Yes, that's right. Because they've changed your sequence, so it would be different. But in actual fact, none of us should be doing that. So that even when we show it to students, we, you know, for me in a school, I don't show anything that does not have the site on it or where the image comes from. No matter how small the font is, it's always there, so that I don't use anything that I haven't got, I haven't cited throughout any presentation I give. And hopefully that's what rubs off on kids. I think partly it is, it's a bit like the calculator is always right. Kids have that idea that it's always right. The garbage in, garbage out doesn't affect them. And it's they just assume the internet is free. And I think for us as teachers, then we have to provide those royalty-free images, the Creative Commons sites, the open source software, all of those other things that really and truly are free to use. The music loops up there that they can use, so that we provide all of the resources to try and get rid of this ethical dilemma of the copyright plagiarism. That should be our aim.
Lunchtime, lunch will be served out in the kitchen. Next session starts.